ailing patient, his vitals beginning to slump in an alarming way. Whilst next to him on the sun lounger drinking the cocktail is the boss of the pharmaceutical industry, whose vitals are climbing equally alarmingly in the other direction. Just making the point that every cloud has a silver lining for somebody. And that's Carlos Latouf's rather cynical take on the swine flu epidemic. Khalil Bendib, another regular. That's Barack Obama going down the tunnel. He imagines there's light at the end of the tunnel. It's the Afghan Pakistan tunnel, of course. There he goes with his lantern. He thinks he sees light at the end of the tunnel, but it's merely a bulb illuminating a barred no exit door. And George W. was here, is written on the wall there. Exit strategies are for sissies, says the little bird in the corner. That's Khalil's take on the very fundamental mistake that Obama is making in Afghanistan. This one deals in the Times, Peter Brooks, with the efforts of the two-party leaders to clean up the mess, each vying with each other to have a bigger clean-out. But I'm not sure that no matter how many vacuum cleaners, how many brushes and shovels they deploy, these two can be counted on. And of course, they both disappear up the vitals of their own vacuum cleaners. That's Peter Brooks' take on the extent to which Gordon Brown and David Cameron are suffering very badly. And I think he's right about that. Let's take a telephone call, see where this one's from. Hello, caller. Yes, hello.
Kimura, hello, George.
Where are you, sir?
Dundee.
Oh, my goodness. Welcome. My old hometown.
Yes. And you're welcome back any time.
Thank you.
Are you a Dundee United fan?
I have a soft spot for Dundee United. They are, of course, called the Arabs.
Well, I'll tell you what. Here's a little swine flu joke. What's the difference between swine flu and Dundee United?
I don't know.
Swine flu made it into Europe. Now, I must carry on into the serious comment. I think it was Pete Seeger who said, it takes a worried man to sing a worried song.
Yes.
Worried now, but we won't be very long. Now, I think that's the thing we should stress. You know, we're rightfully worried at this moment in time, but I think we need to be hopeful. Now, I feel that smaller parties will benefit the people from the and benefit from the lack of competence shown by governments across Europe.
Yeah, I'm going to have to stop you just in case you were about to start mentioning who those smaller parties might be, and that would not be a proper use of my broadcasting pulpit here. But thanks very much for that call. I do think that British politics is going to be atomized at the next election. In fact, in the European elections, the big parties will be very lucky to score a respectable share of the vote, and some of the unexpected gainers are likely to show, and then the run-up to the general election over the next 12 months, if it takes that long, I'm saying there should be a general election very quickly indeed, because I don't believe the current House of Commons is capable of cleaning its own mess. But I do agree with you that a process which has been going on for a long time, actually, when I first started out in politics, about 80% of the people voted for the big two parties. Now it's only just over 50%. And I think that's going to fall considerably in the next 12 months or so. Let's take another telephone call, shall we? Where's this one from? Hello, caller. Yes.
Hello.
Yes, go on.
Hello, sir.
Yes, sir. Where are you?
I'm from Iran. My name is Amir.
Okay, go ahead.
Yes, at first, thank you for giving me this opportunity. I wanted to talk about Iran's election.
Yes.
In my opinion, it's not freedom election, and all of the candidates don't have same opportunity for advertising their plan. In fact, in Iran, we have six national channels, and all of them support Mr. Ahmadinejad plans, and they don't support the other reformist candidate, and I think that's not fairly. And I want to, let me add one more point. I want to refer to the Iran blast. I want to ask you, who will benefit from this fatal blast in Iran? Thank you, George.
I have to ask your apology because I didn't catch that second part of the question. If you email it back into me, I'll try and answer it. If not, maybe next week. But on the first part, I mean, I really think that you're being unfair. First of all, you're phoning from Iran. you're appearing on Press TV, which is an Iranian station, to criticize the Iranian electoral process. And full marks to you for your doing so, and full marks to the Iranians for permitting it. It wouldn't be permitted anywhere else in the Middle East, and that's something I think that you should give credit to Iran for. Secondly, it's not true that all the media is supporting Mr. Ahmadinejad. I know that for a fact. And if it were true, then Mr. Mousavi wouldn't be running him such a close second in the opinion polls at the current time. And as for smaller parties not getting fair treatment in the mass media, well, I can assure you, every country in the world, that complaint could be made. If you want me to show you my scars about the treatment I've had from the British media, then it would be a pretty lurid display. So I don't think that smaller parties not getting what they would regard as a fair crack of the whip truly validates your claim that Iran is not some kind of democracy. It's not democracy as we know it here in London, but then look what's happened to democracy as we know it in London. So I'm very confident that there will be a free and fair presidential election in Iran, and that the person who gets most votes will win. And that's not something you can always say everywhere, even in the United States of America. Let's take an email on the comment wall. And this one is from Sadr City in Iraq, Murtazar. Last week, Ayatollah Khamenei, Iran's supreme leader, said the US is training terrorists in northern Iraq to attack Iran and try to cause sectarian divisions. Said Hassan Nasrallah also said that Israel is training spies and terrorists in Lebanon to attack and cause sectarian divisions. What's your take on this tactic by foreign occupiers? Is there credibility in what the two leaders of the resistance nations above said? Well, empires always divide and rule. That's the way that empires manage to sustain their power in huge territories with massive populations, whilst themselves deploying a relatively small number of people. And I'm sure that the George Bush era had many such dirty tricks operations going on. Now that President Obama has proffered an olive branch towards Iran, I would have hoped that that sort of thing in Iran at least was coming to an end. Spies and saboteurs and wreckers in Lebanon is of course an old story. And imperialism has been intervening and using and exploiting the sectarian divisions in Lebanon for more than half a century. So, thanks a lot, all the way from Sadr City in Iraq. Let's take another telephone call. Yes, caller, where are you calling from?
Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah.
Alaikum salam, where are you?
From London, Mr. George. I'm Iraqi. My question is that the Prime Minister of North Korea in 2004, if he said if America shoot one bullet to North Korea, I'm going to wipe London and Washington. And do you think they are close to fighting now? Because if you see yesterday and the day before, they're very close. Do you think they're going to fight? And how going to be the situation? And second question, Israeli next Sunday, they have biggest training. Do you think the Israeli, their preparation to attack Iran? Because last few months ago, 100 Israeli airplanes, they make training to attack Iran. What do you think, please?
No, that was last year during the Bush era. And I spoke about it extensively at the time. Nothing like that has happened since the Obama presidency. And let's hope that the current trajectory of U.S.-Iranian relations continues. Let's not talk ourselves into a crisis. There is a crisis with North Korea, but North Korea will not be invaded. And it will not be invaded because it has nuclear weapons. Iraq was invaded because it did not have weapons of mass destruction. Korea will not be invaded because it does. And what's needed is calmness, as the Russian foreign minister was saying today, a calm and statesmanlike approach and dialogue and negotiation. And crucially, when the fruits of negotiation are not delivered, as the fruits of previous negotiations with North Korea have not been delivered, then the atmosphere turns ugly. I want peace on the Korean Peninsula. I want unity between South and North Korea, which looked within our grasp just a few short years ago. I want peace between ancient enemies in Korea and Japan. The fact that the United States is a nuclear power in Japan and has a huge troop concentration in the south of Korea is a destabilizing factor. And somebody has to bring some calm to this. And I'm looking for China and the Russian government to do that. And I think that they will. Thanks for your call. Yes, caller, where are you calling from?
I'm calling from Tehran.
You're welcome, sir. Go ahead.
First of all, George, I'm going to ask you, who do you think will win the election?
I think Ahmadinejad will win it.
And second, you are my hero, and I wish the Arab leader would learn from you.
Thank you, sir. Thank you. It's very kind. They were getting lots of traffic from Iran this evening on both sides of the argument. I have no particular insight into the Iranian election. I just have a take that the poorer the people are in Iran, the more working class they are, the more likely they are to vote for Ahmadinejad. It seems to me that the so-called reformist candidates have more of a base amongst the intelligentsia and amongst the better-off people. And by definition, there are more of the first category than there are of the second. But I think it's a close-run thing. I think it's a fair contest. I think the presidential debates are going to be important. If Mr. Mousavi was to really shine in those and really outshine Ahmadinejad, that might begin to tip the balance. But hallelujah, there is a real political process going on in Iran, and I think we should be grateful and glad about that. Let's take another phone call. Yes, caller, where are you calling from?
Hello, George, I'm calling from Milan.
Another Iranian, thanks a lot, go ahead.
I just want to say that caller who called, I think he was from Tehran. What I wanted to say was that there is a lot of, I've moved to Milan maybe 3 years, and what I want to say, I lived in Iran even during Shah and also since the Islamic Revolution. What I want to say is I'm watching Press TV, I'm watching IRIB, all the television channels, and all I can say is where is this man getting his information from? I mean, it's ridiculous. All the channels are giving equal time to every single candidate. It is like almost they are trying too hard to give equal time to every single candidate. Mahmoud Ahmadinejad, Karoubi, Mousavi, Rezaei, they're all getting equal coverage. So what he's saying is nonsense. He's just, you know, like that thing he said, anti-Iran bashing. I don't know why it is the responsibility, you know?
Well, I'm grateful to you for that clarification. I did not know that it was actually equal time. That might be mind-numbingly boring, actually, equal time for all those candidates. But, well, that's up to Iran. But I did contradict him because I know that it's not true that all the stations are backing Ahmadinejad. That's definitely not true because working here at Press TV, I see Iranian output and I see the kind of coverage of the presidency that's going on. And there are lots of people openly criticizing President Ahmadinejad and his record is being subjected to withering criticism in the media in Iran. And again, I make the point that just across the borders, in the immediate neighborhood, there's nothing called democracy at all. There's no elections of any kind, even pretend elections. Never mind an election that's real and vital and alive. Thank you very much for setting the record straight there. Let's go to the next caller. Yes, caller. Hello. Well, we've lost that one. Let's go to the comment wall. Take an SMS instead. This one is from China, my goodness. I don't think most people know about the Koreas. They seem to think there has been two Koreas from the beginning of time. The true story is all the colonial imperial nations tried to take China to war 50 years ago and invaded the Korean Peninsula. The whole world managed to keep one half, but the Korean resistance was too strong for the imperialists, as we see today. Well, that's a useful point to make. Korea is one. The people of the Korean Peninsula are one people, and they were divided by imperialist intervention and war as part of the Cold War, and many thousands of British and American soldiers gave their life's blood in that Cold War episode, and millions of Koreans did, and the people of China, of course, were forced to intervene in that war. And they lost a very considerable number of people and made very great sacrifices, too. So no more war. Let's have no more war in the Korean Peninsula. Let's have a steps towards unification and stability in that region. Thanks for watching all the way out there in China. Let's go back to the comment wall. Take an SMS from Zimbabwe. Simon, why does British people still own 85% of the land, resources, minerals and more in South Africa? Why are British people allowed to kill elephants and lions on the land their families stole and killed the native people to get? Well, Simon, it's a very good point. I don't know if your figures are correct. I doubt if 85% of the land is owned by the people whose ancestors were settlers, but it is a very real problem that in Zimbabwe and in South Africa, the share of the wealth and resources, including the land and what's under it and what roams around on top of it, held by the white minority in those populations, is still completely disproportionate. And Archbishop Tutu said that the British came to Southern Africa with the Bible in one hand and the rifle in the other and taught us to pray with our eyes closed, and when we opened them, they had stolen our countries from all around us. Simon, thanks for watching in Zimbabwe. Let's take a telephone call. Where's this one from? Hello, caller.
Hello, George. How are you?
I'm well, sir. Where are you?
I'm calling in Denmark.
Excellent. Welcome. Go ahead, sir.
Well, when I was in remote area of Somalia, a place called Lasano, I used to listen especially radio. I have my little Sony radio when you talk sport.
Wow.
And I've been watching now this program for the last actually 4 or 5 months. I'm very, very grateful that you give a voice. People has no voice. Not only the rest of the, especially in Palestine, I watch that convoy. I watch everything, how it's going. I wish you all the best. I wish we could, we should have another 4, 5, 10 person like George Galloway. I surely appreciate what you're doing, and I congratulate you and pray for God, and thank you very much, sir.
My goodness, thank you. I'm very touched by that. Not only that you have that high opinion of me out there in Denmark, but that you were listening in Somalia, in a deserted area of Somalia, in a small village, to my radio shows on TalkSport, which are on Friday and Saturday nights. It's remarkable how Press TV has reached across the continents. When I was in the United States, everywhere I went, people came up and said that they were watching Press TV. It's taking the truth to all corners of the world, and may God continue to strengthen it. Let's go to the comment wall and take an email. This one is from Tanzania, Omari. I'd like to know why America and its allies like the UK and Australia and alike are forcing Iran to withdraw its nuclear plan while Zionist Israel and America itself have those weapons. Who has guaranteed that colonials will not use their weapons? Well, it's a point I've made many times, Omari. I'm against all nuclear weapons, but I've never seen the argument that some countries are allowed to have them whilst other countries will be invaded or attacked for dreaming of having them. It must be pointed out that Iran says that it is not intent on developing nuclear weapons, and Mr. Al-Baradei of the IAEA, which has the job of checking on these things, has said there is no evidence, I repeat, no evidence that Iran is trying to build nuclear weapons. But my point is, why is Israel allowed to have nuclear weapons pointed at Iran, but Iran will be attacked if it even dreams or is even suspected of dreaming of obtaining a nuclear weapon? If these things are for a balance of terror, how come only the select few are allowed to have them? Let's go to the telephone lines again. Yes, hello, caller.
Hello, George.
Yes, sir, where are you?
I'm Danny from London.
Welcome, Danny.
I have a question on Turkey's admission to the European Union.
Go ahead.
As Turkey is the first majority Muslim country to join the European Union, what would the implications of that be?
Well, it hasn't, of course, joined. It's made application to join. Britain is supporting its application. There are reservations in France and in Germany. I myself support its application to join the European Union. And, of course, a necessary concomitant of that would be that Turkey would have to improve its human rights record. Its army would have to be kept out of politics permanently. Democracy would have to be enshrined in Turkey in a very real way, not always operating under the shadow of military coup d'etat. torture in prisons would have to cease, and the rights of the minorities in Turkey would have to be properly respected. But by and large, I think the Turkish government is doing a good job for the Turkish people. And I think that it would benefit both the EU and Turkey if Turkey were to join the EU. And I certainly give them my support with these necessary caveats. Let's go back to the comment wall and take an email. This one from Ghana. Derek, I really love the new show Press TV started today. Called Africa Today. You are very courageous. I wish all the success with this new show. I haven't caught that yet, Derek, but I will. And it just goes to show that Press TV is not Anglo-centric or Euro-centric in any way. It's seeking to build an audience in North America, in Africa, in the Middle East. And we've even had people on the line tonight from as far away as Sydney, Australia, Denmark, and all sorts of places. We've had Milan, we've had Greece, we've had all sorts of callers, all sorts of opinions, including calls from Iran itself, bitterly critical of the Iranian political system, a call which was not only able to be made, but was broadcast live on television on an Iranian TV station. So I think this is all shaping up to be a really remarkable and quite unique development in broadcasting history. And I'm not just talking about shows like mine or like Africa Today. The news coverage also is bringing the truth to people. During Gaza, Press TV was amongst the foremost speaker of the truth. I'll be back next week at the same time, God willing. And if you enjoyed it tonight, I hope you'll join me again then. Check out The Real Deal too on Sunday nights.
Life on this planet is in serious danger. Today, with a human population rapidly growing to an unprecedented size, with world economies creating massive industrial landscapes, with consumption reaching staggering proportions, our impact on the environment has never been greater, nor the consequences so far-reaching. We are in conflict with the natural world, and what is at stake are the planet's life support systems and the very existence of the human species itself. Is it the future we need or can have? It's important to realize that your vision is as important as anyone else's. So think about the kind of future we need for you and your children.
First hand for the fishermen, the second for the mothers, and the third for the community. The song is about the hardship of going to sea. It gives them strength to pull the net out of the water.
These vessels will go